Good evening.
Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. It is June 24th, 2009, and we had some sad news that happened today, and if you're all familiar with the news of Michael Jackson passing away, and also Farrah Fawcett passed away also, and our hearts go out to their families. I want to get that out of the way, and hoping they can be strong and know that our prayers are with them to this through this tough time. Tonight's show, first of all, let me give you my call-in number. My call-in number is 347-677-1749. It's 347-677-1749. We'll be discussing domestic violence, and we're going to do it in three segments. We're going to start this Thursday. It'll be next Thursday at the same time, and the Thursday after this one at the same time, which is 8 p.m. here, Central Time in Alexandria, Pineville and DeVille area of Louisiana, and what we call Rappies Parish, Central Louisiana. All you out there, I hope you're enjoying this hot weather, because sometimes I feel like I am and sometimes I feel like I'm not. With the record heat, I hope everyone is staying cool. I hope people are drinking plenty of water. Soda has sugar in it, which can dehydrate you. So I wish you guys drink plenty of water. Enjoy the sunshine when you can. Make sure you're wearing sunscreen. As you know, we suffer and from skin cancer if we don't stay protected right when it comes to being in the sun. That goes for African Americans, too. We don't think that we can get sunburned, but we do. With the summertime here, we know that domestic violence seems to be on the rise. So I was trying to think of a show that we could do, and I thought domestic violence would be good because of all the tragic situations and victims of domestic violence in the past several years. Tonight, the first segment we'll be talking about is we'll define domestic violence. Then we'll talk about trends in homicides pertaining to domestic violence, stories of domestic violence, and if you're out there that you're having problems with your mate, how to obtain a protective order would be another thing I would like to discuss tonight. Again, my call-in number is 347-677-1749. Let's start off talking about what domestic violence is. According to lawhelp.org, which is Louisiana, found this information about the laws in Louisiana pertaining to domestic violence, and I wanted to kind of go over what we defined as domestic violence. Domestic violence is an action used to get and keep power and control over family members or intimate partners. By law, domestic violence includes but is not limited to acts of physical and sexual abuse, stalking, and most crimes against the person. Domestic violence hurts victims from every class, race, and educational background. It is a serious and common problem in Louisiana. The state has laws to protect victims of domestic violence. If you or someone you love is being abused, know that you have the right to stop the abuse. Now, they have also steps that we can go through for a victim that's being abused. First of all, as women, and when I say women, men are abused too. It is just not more common for men to discuss or to talk about the abuse they go through. But men are being abused as well as women are. There's steps. First of all, you can call the police. You can press criminal charges. Keep yourself and your children safe. You may want to go to a safe place first. Remember that if you have children, you have a duty to protect them. Domestic violence programs and shelters are all over the state. You can call one at any time. The Louisiana statewide hotline, this is for Louisiana area, it's 1-800-411-1333, and it's a toll-free number, and it also is confidential. Now, the national number, hotline number for domestic violence will be, I had it written down here. I'll have to get you that number at the end of the show. I thought I wrote it down in here, but I didn't. Oh, well. Oh, yes, it is. I have it right here. The national number or the national hotline for domestic violence is 1-800-799-7233 or 1-800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E. And I will be mentioning that number again at the end of this segment. Okay, now that we know what domestic violence is, we were also talking about how to get legal help if you want to. And I'm thinking they stressed if you want it. It's simply because some women are so afraid they don't want the help. You can get a protective order. It says, for yourself and your children, if you have any, it is free, and you can apply on your own even without a lawyer. You know, sometimes the myths of you have to have a lawyer, sometimes you can do this on your own once you get the courage to do that, because I know it's hard for women, you know, to have the fear in them that this person is not going to stop till they hurt you to the point where, you know, can even be death. You know, with a domestic violence or a perpetrator, their whole point is to control you and stop you from enjoying who you are in your life and to put you and your kids in a point in your life where you are going to be totally afraid to say anything or do anything. So getting a protective order can help, but you have to, along with the police, allow them to enforce the protective order. Consider divorce. And that's just something you can consider, is to get away from this person if you're married to them. More permanent solutions for yourself, your children, and your property. If you're married, it is important to speak with a lawyer about your choices if you want to leave your spouse. Because simply, this is what they call community property state. So there is a possibility that he won't give what there would be a battle, in other words, for you to get what you need for your children, because you're talking about leaving him. And how dare you do that? He doesn't understand how you would want to leave him. Let's see, you can also go for a restraining order, too. We'll talk about, at the end, we will talk about how you can go about getting a protective order if you're interested in one. Okay. Let's see. When you're a victim of domestic violence, you may give your rights or extra protections in different areas. Bankruptcy. You have the right to file for bankruptcy protection from your creditors and discharge your debts even without your abuser's agreement. At school, you can get an order keeping the abuser from visiting your children at school. On the job, you have the right to expect your employer to keep the workplace reasonably safe. You need to report abuse or harassment to your employer so they have a chance to do something about it. You can also get an order to keep your abusers from calling you and to keep him away from your job. Health insurance. It is illegal for a group health insurance company to deny you or to charge you more because you have been a victim of domestic violence. These are very interesting things I had no idea that you have the rights to as a victim of domestic violence. For housing, you can usually get a court order to make your abuser leave your home or apartment for up to 18 months if you're married to him or you have minor children together. Taxes. You have the right not to file joint tax returns with your abuser. You may have a defense to IRS fines or penalties caused by your abuser. Say immigration benefits, battered spouses and children of U.S. citizens or lawful permanent residents can self-petition, file the paperwork yourself without abuser's help. The INS can get lawful permanent residency for themselves. Thought that was very interesting. And public benefits, certain requirements to get welfare and food stamp benefits may be waived. You would not have to follow certain rules. If it is hard to do anything because of domestic violence, let the agency know about the situation. If the agency gives you a hard time, call your local free legal services program to see if they can help you. Very interesting. It says in getting these benefits, some of the special rules for domestic violence victims are you can keep your physical address out of the agency computer records. The value of resources you own together with your abuser cannot be used against you in determining your eligibility for benefits. You may not have to work or look for work. You shouldn't be cut off benefits because of time limits. Domestic violence is a hardship exemption. You may be entitled to expedited food stamps. You shouldn't have to comply with any rule that would endanger you or your family or penalize you for the abuse. Very interesting stuff. Okay. And that was according to the lawhelp.org LA information, which I thought was very interesting. Again, I will give you the national hotline. It's 1-800-799-7233 or 1-800-799-SAFE. SAFE. Now, let's talk about stories of domestic violence. I know one, I don't want to say it's a personal one that I know, but I have a friend, a very close friend of mine, who was a friend of domestic violence. There was a story that happened in Austin, Texas in 2007, and it was concerning a deputy sheriff from Travis County. His name was Julius Conley. And if you have an opportunity, you can go on YouTube. What I did was I Googled the name Julius Conley, which is J-U-L IUSCONLEY, and the YouTube segment came up where he was sitting in an interrogation room and he confessed that he tried to kill his wife and her friend at the time. She was attempting to move out. She had moved back to California. She came back to get her stuff because of years of abuse, and she kept it secret simply because he was a deputy sheriff and she didn't want him to lose his job. And this happened in 2007. She came to move her stuff out the house, and he was there, or he showed up, and he got angry, and he hit her with a barbell. And her friend that was helping her move, which was a male, he hit him. And he died, the young man that was with her died in 2007, and she died in 2008. At the time, her name was Dana. Dana was pregnant. And why I connect myself with her is because my close friend was a friend of hers. They lived in the same neighborhood. And when you watch the YouTube video, you'll see my friend and her husband being interviewed by the news reporter on there. And I thought it was such a touching story because this lady left behind two children, actually three, with the baby that was born during the time she was in a coma, because she stayed in a coma for 2 years before she passed away. And she delivered a baby during that time. And Mr. Conley was charged with murder first and attempted murder, and then his charge went to to murder, because he murdered the young man, and then she passed away soon after or later on, leaving her with three children, and there were the grandparents on the mother's side at this time. Trying to save the man is not something we should do, but we do it because, you know, maybe he's the only one who's making the money in the house, and you're thinking it's, you know, I better not tell on him because not only will I get in trouble, also he'll get in trouble, he'll lose his job, and then we won't have any money to survive off of. You know, it's a lot of stuff women go through. I can say I have never been a victim of that type of domestic violence, but I have been a victim of physical with the young man. But it was a blessing that I was intelligent enough to know when to walk away. I also have another friend, which is a very close friend of mine, that for 7 years was domestic violence. She went through it, and she finally got out of the situation. She divorced him. And to this day, she's 20 years retired from the military, and she's living her life, you know. She knew when to get out, you know. It happens in the military just as well as it happens in the civilian world, you know. You don't hear the stories as much, but it's there, you know. It's really there. She's doing fine now. And I don't know if you remember the young lady. There's two incidents that's going through my mind right now. One incident was the lady who the man had her son, videotape her beating, being beat by him, being degraded by him, being verbally and physically abused by him, until her boss found out that this was going on, and now he's serving time. You know, we can talk about this all night when it comes to men doing the things they do. There's another story, and this was on national news, and it's the story about the young lady who set his girlfriend on fire. They actually had the videotape of him walking in there and dousing her on fire. This happened in 2008, I think this happened. Man charged with setting girlfriend on fire. A young woman doused with lighter fluid and set on fire woke recently from a two-month coma. Kiercer Washington spoke exclusively to CBS Dana Kosloff, Wednesday, reliving the nightmare in the hopes of bringing justice to the man, she says, who is responsible. Washington's family says her attack came after 2 months of abuse by her now former boyfriend. She says she was still afraid when she came out of the coma. Now she wants to tell people what happened and to warn others. I remember asking him, why did he do this to me? Why did you do this? Look at me, Washington said. She was burned so badly, she had been in a coma for 2 months. Now that she's awake, she says her family's nightmare is not over. Washington is finally out of the hospital, still fighting for her life. 11 days ago, she woke from a coma to tell her family her burns were no accident and that her boyfriend, 21-year-old Dominique Traylor, set her on fire after a fight. Then he appeared with the lighter fluid and then squirted me, lit the match. I caught on fire, Washington said. Washington says Traylor then put her in a tub before driving her to the hospital, calming all the while she was hurt in a barbecuing accident. I remember asking him, why did he do this to me? He said he didn't say nothing. Traylor's now in jail, but Washington is not the only victim. After the January 15th incident and before Traylor's arrest, Washington's mother and her six of her young siblings fled their South Side home in fear, only to find it vandalized and unlivable when they returned. They've been homeless ever since. I didn't know what he might do to me or my other children, said Washington's mother, Charlotte Terry. Those who work with domestic violence victims say Washington's story is tragic, but sadly not unusual. A recent study estimates 1 in 5 teenagers and 1 in 3 adults will be in an abusive relationship. There has to be a change in the social norm that involves everyone of naming this violence as wrong, said Dawn Dalton, the Chicago Metropolitan Battered Women's Network. And Washington says she will tell other women in her situation, when he says he will kill you, he's telling the truth. He will hurt you. Be more safe so you don't want to end up like me. Washington was released from the hospital Wednesday after being readmitted this week for an infection. Traylor was charged with a hideous battery. His bond was $3 million. So we already know he is not getting out anytime soon. So those are stories that, you know, touch my heart and touch others' hearts. And I had the opportunity to volunteer for the local domestic violence program we have here when I first moved back here back in 98, 99. And I learned some interesting stuff going through my training. It just amazed me, you know, even though I've seen domestic violence, I was part of domestic violence, you never really know the psyche of a person who's going through that. And it really kind of boggled my mind that all of this was going on. And, you know, we live our everyday lives and we don't think about the ones who are afraid to go to sleep at night. They sit up and watch, you know, over their kids so he won't come home and do something to them. And, you know, some women get up and go to work every day go home afraid, you know, to walk in the house because they don't know what's going to happen. So my heart goes out to those people. I really, really feel sorry for them. And wish there was other things that I could do to help them out. Now, I wanted to discuss also the trends of homicide dealing with domestic violence. It says according to the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Program, Bureaus of Justice Statistics, that there has been a decline in homicide of intimates. Especially male victims. Intimates are defined to include spouses, ex-spouses, boyfriends, and girlfriends. The number of men murdered by intimates dropped by 75% since 1976. The number of women by intimates was stable for nearly 2 decades. After 1993, the number declined, reaching the lowest level recorded in 2004. In general, the number of intimates victims in each race and gender group declined. Between 76 and 2005, the The number of white females killed by intimates rose in the mid-80s, then declined after 1993, reaching the lowest recorded in 2002. The number fluctuated slightly after 2002. The number of intimate homicides for all other race and gender groups declined over the period. The number of black males killed by intimates dropped by 83%, white males by 61%, black females by 52%, and white females by 6%. About 11% of murder victims were determined to have been killed by an intimate. Victim relationships between 76 and 2005. The total intimates was 100%, was 594,276. Non-intimates was 6,529. Undetermined was 209,194. Female murder victims are substantially more likely than male murder victims to have been killed by an intimate. In recent years, about one-third of female murder victims were killed by an intimate. About 3% of male murder victims were killed by intimate. Of all female murder victims, the proportion killed by an intimate has been increasing. Of male murder victims, the proportion killed by an intimate has dropped. For every age group, female murder victims are more likely than males to have been killed by an intimate. Most intimate, when I say the word intimate, that's the other person, the spouse, the boyfriend, the lover. It says most intimate homicides involve spouses, although in recent years the number of deaths by boyfriend and girlfriends were about the same. The intimate homicide rate has fallen for blacks in every gender and relationship category, while the rate of whites has not declined for all categories. For white girlfriends was higher in 2005 than it was in 76. For white wives and ex-wives has declined, but not as much as that for white husbands and ex-husbands. For black husbands and ex-husbands was more 20 times greater in 76 than it was in 2005. The higher for black girlfriends than any other group is 2005, although it has declined 66% since 76. And those are numbers that the Justice Department keeps up with when it comes to stats, which is very interesting, and it's the way that they measure the precautions and the laws and the procedures and the policies that they put in place dealing with domestic violence for each state. It says the number of male and female intimate victims killed with guns has fallen. In general, guns are most often used in intimate homicide, but weapon type varies by relationship from 1990 to 2005. Over two-thirds of the spouse and ex-spouse victims were killed by guns. Boyfriends were more likely to be killed by knives than any other group of intimates. Girlfriends were more likely to be killed by force than any other group of intimates. Let's see. It says percent of all homicides involving intimates by urban, suburban, and rural areas from 76 to 2005. Victims, offenders, relationship by victims, gender, 76 to 2005. The numbers, the stats have not changed that much. But it says right here, homicides by relationship and weapon type from 1990 to 2005. The husband, it says, by a gun was 69%, by a knife was 26%, by blunt object was 2%. By force, 1%, other weapon is 3%. If it was an ex-husband, it was 86% by gun, 10% by knife. Blunt object was 1%, there was no force, and 3% for other weapons. Wife, 68% by gun, 14% by knife, 5% by blunt object, 10% by force, and 4% by other weapon. Ex-wife is 77% by gun, 12% by knife, 3% by blunt object, 5% by force, and 3% by other weapon. A boyfriend, 45% by gun, 47% by knife, 3% by blunt object, 3% by force, and 3% by other weapon. The girlfriend, 56% by a gun, 20% by a knife, 5% by a blunt object, 14% by force, and 5% by another weapon. Note that the victims of 9/11 terrorist attacks are not included in the analysis due to the refinements of the analysis. The data presented may differ from previous editions of this information. So, I thought this was very interesting to bring to you the trends of domestic violence and how important it is for the justice system to stay involved in domestic violence, because that trickles down to the money that is spent to make these laws and put them in place. The police, you know, each department or each avenue of dealing with domestic violence is affected in some kind of way. It trickles, either it's going to go up or it's going to trickle down. And we want to make sure that these people are safe. So the laws are very important to be put in place. And like I said, these stats are very important for us to use toward making decisions on the laws. Let's talk about warning signs and symptoms of abusive relationships. This is by HEP. It's called a helpguide.org, Mental Domestic Violence Abuse. Signs and symptoms. If you think your spouse or partner is abusive, or you suspect that someone you know is in an abusive relationship, review the red flags and other information on domestic abuse and violence covered in this article. Not all abuse involves physical threat. Emotional abuse can also leave deep and lasting scars. Recognizing the warning signs and symptoms of spousal abuse is the first step, but taking action is the most important step by breaking free. Okay? Let's say domestic abuse, also known as spousal abuse, occurs when one person in an intimate relationship or marriage tries to dominate and control the other person. Remember, this is about controlling this person. Being in control allows them to think in their minds and their hearts that it's fine to be abusive. An abuser doesn't play fair. He or she uses fear, guilt, shame, and intimidation to wear you down and gain complete power over you. He or she may threaten you, hurt you, or hurt those around you. Domestic abuse that includes physical violence is called domestic violence. Victims of domestic abuse or domestic violence may be men or women. And I told you that it might not be as much often as men talk about abuse as women do. And it's almost like now it's not, but there was a time when it was a taboo for men to talk about being abused by their spouse, or female spouse, that is. Although women are more commonly victimized, the abuse happens among heterosexual couples in the same-sex partnership. Except for the gender difference, domestic abuse doesn't discriminate. It happens within all age ranges, ethnic backgrounds, and financial levels. The abuse may occur during a relationship while the couple is breaking up or after the relationship has ended. Sometimes they just don't want to let go. Despite what many people believe, domestic violence is not due to the abuser's loss of control over his behavior. In fact, violence is a deliberate choice made by the abuser in order to take control over his wife or partner. Now, special note, it says stressful economic times trigger more instances of spousal abuse. So keep that in mind. When a person is under a lot of stress, maybe it's from home, personal stuff they're going through. It might be just from work, you know, coming home, and they have to find a way to get rid of their stress, so they become abusive toward their spouse or the nearest person there. And most of the time it is the spouse, and sometimes it's the children. Sometimes it's both. Reasons we know an abuser's behavior is not about anger and rage. He does not batter other individuals. The boss who does not give him time off, or the gas station attendant that spills gas down the side of his car. He waits until there is no witnesses and abuses the person he abuses the person he says he loves. If you ask an abused woman, can he stop when the phone rings or the police come to the door, she will say yes. Most often when the police show up, he's looking calm, cool, and collected, and she's the one who may look hysterical. If he were truly out of control, he would not be able to stop himself when it is to his advantage to do so. The abuser very often escalates from pushing and shoving to hitting in places where the bruises and marks will not show. If he were out of control or in a rage, he would not be able to direct or limit where he kicks or his punches land. Imagine that. Okay? That an abuser, and they do, some of them know where to hit you, where it won't cut, where they won't show. They can hit you in your stomach, hit you on your legs because you might wear pants, you don't wear short dresses. So they hit you where they know that nobody can see it, unless they hit you in their face. When they hit you in the face, you know, the first thing you do is you grab makeup and put on makeup to disguise the scars and the bruises. Okay, it says, addition to physical violence, abusers use the following tactics to exert power over their wives or partners. Dominance, humiliation, isolation, threats, intimidation, denial, and blame. Dominance. Let's talk about dominance for a second here. It says abusive individuals need to feel in charge of the relationship. They will make decisions for you and the family, tell you what to do, and expect you to obey without question. Your abuser may treat you like a servant, child, or even as his possession. Isn't that amazing? When they use humiliation, an abuser will do everything he can to make you feel bad about yourself or defective in some way. After all, if you believe you're worthless and that no one else will want you, you're less likely to leave. Insults, name-calling, shaming, and public put-downs are all weapons of abuse designed to erode your self-esteem and make you feel powerless. This person is not stupid. Okay, he already knows he can do the mind thing with you. He isolates you from everyone. In order to increase your dependence on him, an abusive partner will cut you off from outside world. He may keep you from seeing family or friends or even prevent you from going to work or school. You may have to ask permission to do anything, go anywhere, or to see anyone. That's amazing. Threat. An abuser commonly use threats to keep their victims from leaving or to scare them into dropping charges. Your abuser may threaten to hurt you or kill you, your children, other family members, or even pets. He may also threaten to commit suicide, file false charges against you, or report you to child services. Just imagine, he's wasting all that energy doing this to you when all he probably needs is to get some help with something that's not even, that doesn't have anything to do with him being abusive. Intimidation. Your abuser may use a variety of intimidation tactics designed to scare you into submission. Such tactics include making threatening looks or gestures, smashing things in front of you, destroying property, hurting your pets, or putting weapons on display. The clear message is that if you don't obey, there will be violent consequences. Denial and blame. Abusers are very good at making excuses for the inexcusable. They will blame their abusive and violent behavior on a bad childhood, a bad day, and even on the victims of their abuse. Their abuser may minimize the abuse or deny that it occurs. He will commonly shift the responsibility onto you. Somehow his violence and abuse is your fault. See what you made me do? Now go in there and wash your face. And I know you got some concealer in there. Put some of that concealer on that swollen eye. Next time, just do what I say, and I promise you I won't hit you. You always make me hit you. Does that sound familiar to someone out there as being abused? Those are the things they say to you. And the idea that nobody wants you. No matter what you do, you're dumb, you're stupid. I don't even know why I even waste my time with you. Our kid's going to be just as dumb and stupid as you are. Don't you ever try to take my children. If you try to take my children from you, I'll kill you. If I can't have you, nobody can have you. Those are the phrases and the words that they use to keep you trapped in a relationship that you don't want to be in. Do you understand how important it is for you to save yourself? If you don't want to save yourself, save your children. You know, we don't realize when we're in these relationships and we continue to have children. Okay, my thing is, if I'm getting my butt kicked every day, there's no way, if I've already had children with this person, and I know in my mind I'm trying to get away from him, I'm not going to get pregnant again. He's not going to tell me not to take my pills if I was on birth control pills. He's not going to tell me not to use protection because I'm going to use protection because I don't want any more children. I wouldn't want my children to go through what I'm going through. So I would decide not to keep continue having children with this man. But some of us do this. We have to understand that domestic abuse falls into a common pattern. A cycle of violence, abuse, guilt, rationalization or excuses, normal behavior, fantasy and planning, and setup. Abuse, the abuser lashes out with aggressive or violent behavior. The abuse is a power play designed to show the victim who is boss. Guilt. After the abusive episode, the abuser feels guilt, but not over what he's done to the victim. The guilt is over the possibility of being caught and facing the consequences. Rationalization or excuses. The abuser rationalizes what he's done. He may come up with a string of excuses or blame the victim for his own abusive behavior. Anything to shift the responsibility from himself. That's a coward. I don't care if you're listening to my show now or if you're listening to it in the future, you are a coward if you have to hit a man. If you have to hit a wife, your woman, whatever, your girlfriend, whatever you want to call her, or him. If you have to put your hands on another human being, you are a coward. Period. Normal behavior. The abuser does everything he can to regain control and keep the victim in the relationship. He may act as if nothing has happened, or he may turn on the charm. This peaceful honeymoon phase may give the victim hope, for the abuser has really changed this time. Oh, what are you going to do, Sue? Are you going to leave him? Oh, he's changed. He said he wouldn't hit me anymore. He promised he wouldn't hit me anymore. We went out and we had dinner. He brought me roses, and everything is fine. He's fine. It's great now. No, I'm not going anywhere. Do you hear that? Because that's what we do. We cover up. We cover up because of the fear. We cover up because we truly in our heart want to believe that he has changed. Fantasy and planning. The abuser begins to fantasize about abusing his victim again, spending a lot of time thinking about what she's done wrong and how he'll make her pay. Then he makes a plan for turning the fantasy of abuse into reality. The rice. The rice was sticky. You should have gotten up and cooked me another pot of rice. Why was the rice sticky? You're sitting around here all day long. You have plenty of time to cook my rice right. Why is the bread? The bread is dry. I don't like these biscuits. Now I'm going to have to do something about it. I'm going to have to show you that I want you to cook the way I want you to cook. Or else, there's consequences. You're no longer a woman, a grown woman, a responsible person. You're now somebody's child. In his mind, as the boss that he wants to claim he is now the father and you are the child. And that's how he likes it. And not only is it domestic violence physical, it's emotional, it's sexual, it can be rape. Just because I'm your wife does not give you a right to rape me. Do you understand what I'm saying? Does not give you the right because I'm your wife. But that's the mindset of an abuser. You belong to me. You're my property. And at one time, if you go through the history of domestic violence, women were considered a piece of property. They were not considered a separate person. They were considered property. So when domestic violence happened in families, it was the family secret. The public had nothing to do with it. Police would not come out. It was a family matter. And that's scary, and that's years of that. So just imagine if it's generation from generation of domestic violence, how devastating that is. Setup. The abuser sets up the victim and puts his plan into motion, creating a situation where he can justify abusing her. Just like I said, for instance, the rice. The rice was not correct for him. So what did he do? He got angry and started in on her about the rice. Okay, so in the full cycle of domestic violence, a man abuses his partner. After he hits her, he experiences self-directed guilt. He says, "I'm sorry for hurting you." What he does not say is, "Because I might get caught," he then rationalizes his behavior by saying that his partner is having an affair with someone. He tells her, "If you weren't such a worthless whore, I wouldn't have to hit you." He then acts contrite, reassuring her that he will not hurt her again. He then fantasizes and reflects on the past abuse and how he will hurt her again. He plans on telling her to go to the store to get some groceries. What he withholds from her is that she has a certain amount of time to do the shopping. When she is held up in traffic and is a few minutes late, he feels completely justified in assaulting her because you're having an affair with the store clerk. He has just set her up. Isn't that amazing? This is according to the Mid Valley Women's Crisis Service. Isn't this amazing what women go through? Or what men go through, or partners go through. I was just shocked and amazed at this information that's out there. And women, there's information out there. There's things that you can read. There's people that you can contact. But you know what makes it hard on the people who are trying to help you? Is when they've done all they can for you and you're gone right back out there and you're gone right back to that person after all they've done to you. And it's not that we want to blame you for that because of the time that we felt that we wasted trying to help you and you turned around and turned and went back to that person. It's because we understand that you haven't gotten the concept that you need to leave this person alone. Your abuser's apologies and loving gestures in between the episode of the abuse, can make it difficult to leave. He may make you believe that you are the only person who can help him, that things will be different this time, and that he truly loves you. However, the dangers of staying are real. The more you stay, the worse it gets. Domestic abuse often escalates from threats and verbal abuse to physical violence and even murder. And while physical injury may be the most obvious danger, the emotional and psychological consequences of domestic abuse are also severe. No one deserves this kind of pain, and your first step to breaking free is recognizing that your situation is abusive. Once you acknowledge the reality of an abusive situation, then you can get help you need. That's amazing. There are many signs of abusive relationships. The most significant sign of fear of your partner, the most significant sign is the fear of your partner. Other signs include a partner who belittles you or tries to control you and feeling of self-loathing and helplessness and desperation. To determine whether your relationship is abusive, answer the questions yes or no. I'm going to stop right there, and we can pick this up again in this area next Thursday at 8 p.m., and we'll talk about the signs of an abusive relationship. Because I just thought this was very important for us to know and to be familiar with. If you know someone who's being abused, I will encourage you to please take time out and call this number. It's 1-800-799-7233 or 1-800-799-SAFE. This is the National Hotline for Domestic Violence. And you have to understand, if you're in different states, different counties, we have parishes here, to make sure you know where your local shelter is, because they have them all over the United States. Make sure you take precautions. And real quick, I'll tell you about the protective order and how to go about obtaining the steps to get to a protective order. Step one is getting the necessary forms. To start your case, you will need to fill out the necessary forms. You can get the forms from the clerk of court at the courthouse where you currently live, where you formerly lived, where your abuser lives, or where the abuse took place. You can also download them on your, there should be a local website to download the court forms for you. It says carefully fill out the form. You will need to include several items on the petition: your name, the names of your minor children, the name and address of the parish or county or residence of each abuser, facts and circumstances concerning the abuse, the relationship between each petitioner, the victim, and each abuser, the relationship between the petitioner and any person who's on behalf of petition is for, like example, the mother might be the petitioner on behalf of her minor child who is being abused, a request for one or more long-term protective orders, your address and address of others affected people, such as your children, may remain confidential with the court. Be sure to inform the clerk of court you need your need for confidentiality. Read the petition carefully and ask questions if you don't understand something. Write briefly about the most recent incident of violence using descriptive language: slapping, grabbing, choking, threatening. That fits your situation. Be specific. Include details and dates if possible. Let's see. A domestic violence organization can help you fill it out. Step three is request a temporary restraining order if necessary. If you need to immediate protection from the abuse, you can request an ex parte, a temporary restraining order. If you request a TRO, is what it's called, the form will include an affidavit signed by each petitioner victim that the facts and the circumstances in the petition are true and correct, and it is a serious offense to give away, to give any false statements under oath contained in the affidavit, and it may be punishable by fine or imprisonment. Drop my mouth, sorry. Okay, bring identification for your, for you and identifying information about your abuser. When you go to court, remember to bring some form of identification. It is also helpful to bring identifying information about your abuser if you have it: a photo, addresses of residence and employment, phone numbers, a description and plate number of your abuser's car, any history of drugs or gun ownership. Go to the courthouse to file the forms. You will need to file forms in the parish or county courthouse where you currently live, where you formerly lived, where your abuser lived, or where the abuse took place. Okay. Step five, a judge will review your petition. After you finish filing your paperwork, the clerk will forward it to a judge. The judge may wish to ask you questions, review your petition. The judge will decide whether or not to issue the temporary restraining order. And if you seek a long-term protective order, the judge will set a date for a full court hearing. You will be given a copy of your petition along with papers that state the time and date of your hearing for a long-term protective order. If the judge issues you a temporary restraining order, the judge will complete a uniform abuse prevention order and forward it to the clerk of court for filing. Keep a copy of your order with you at all times. The clerk of the issuing court will send a uniform abusive prevention order to Louisiana. This is dealing with Louisiana Protective Order Registry. Police and other law enforcement agencies anywhere in the state can find out about your order by checking a computerized registry of orders. Step six, service of process. The clerk will also give a copy of the petition and the TRO to the sheriff's office to serve your abuser. Remember your protective order is not valid until the abuser has been presented with it. The abuser must be notified to be present at court on the date and time of the hearing and inform any temporary emergency orders that a judge has granted you. A sheriff will try to serve the abuser with papers. Usually the court will send copies of the order and notice to hearing to the police or sheriff, but in some areas you may have to bring papers to the sheriff or police yourself. You may want to ask the court clerk or a domestic violence organization for information about serving the abuser. Do not try and serve the abuser in person with the papers yourself. Keep that in mind. Step seven, what will I have to prove at the hearing? As a plaintiff requesting protective order, you must prove that the defendant has committed acts of domestic abuse defined by law against you or your children. Convince the judge that you need protection in specific things you ask for in the petition. Step eight, the full court hearing. You must go to the hearing. If you do not go to the hearing, your emergency order will expire and you will have to start the process over. If you do not show up at the hearing, it may be harder for you to be granted an order in the future. If the abuser does not show up for the hearing, the judge may still grant you a long-term protective order, or the judge may order a new hearing date. You may wish to hire a lawyer to help your case, especially if your abuser has a lawyer. You can also represent yourself. If you show up to court and your abuser has a lawyer and you do not, you may ask the judge for continuance to set a later date, court date, so you can have time to find a lawyer for yourself. If you cannot go to the hearing at the scheduled time, you may call the judge's office to ask that your case be continued, but the judge may deny your request. That's a chance you have to take, so keep that in mind. So if you're going to start these steps, these eight steps, to get a protective order, I advise you to go through it. Do not stop until you finish, when you do the complete step eight. This is very important for you, and if you have children involved, that's very important for the children. I hope the information that I've just given you guys is very, very important and is very helpful. And I'm hoping that I can continue to help you on this segment as I keep, as I get prepared for my next two segments. Like I said, my next two segments will be next Thursday. One is at 8 p.m. and the Thursday following that Thursday at the same time, 8 p.m., from 8 to 9 p.m. Let's see. You may email me at sensible64@yahoo.com or xandercherry@yahoo.com. I just started getting on Twitter, so bear with me with this one. I'm at chocolatelady02@twitter.com. and Salita@Facebook.com. Chocolate Lady, LATELADI02@Twitter.com. So if you want to write me something, email me something, if you have some information that you want me to share with others, please feel free to give it to me. I'm hoping this show really helped you guys out. And again, like I said earlier, my heart goes out to the Jackson family and Farrah Fawcett and Ryan, family. This has been the Lily 44 Show, Blog Talk Radio, and I'm hoping everyone has a great evening. I shall talk to you guys next week, and again, we will continue the segment on domestic violence. Thank you. And good night.
And yeah.